Okay, we're gonna start. We're a couple minutes late. My name's Chris, and I'm an alcoholic. Everybody's on fire after that 8-9 panel. Nobody wants. I've been taught that means it was a good meeting. So, the Fellowship of the Spirit conference is dedicated to carrying the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, as set forth in the book Alcoholics Anonymous, to both alcoholics and family members of alcoholic families, and Al-Anon family groups. The workshop is one of the ways we hope to share our experience, strength, and hope, focusing on the 12 steps of the program of recovery. Our next workshop will be focused on steps 10 and 11. Our panelists will each share for 10 to 15 minutes on steps 10 and 11, and then we'll open the floor for the remainder of the time. And we're going to start with reading what this means first. All right, so step 10, continue to take personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. And Eric's going to be speaking on step 10, so he's asked me to read page 84. Says, this thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We vigorously commence this way of living as we have cleaned up the past. We have entered the world of the Spirit. Our next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for our lifetime. Continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When these crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately and make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. Then we resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. Love and tolerance of others is our code. And Eric just found out he was speaking like less than 10 minutes ago, so he's really happy about it. So who's Eric?
Yeah. Hi, everybody. I'm Eric, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Eric.
I have to be quite honest. I don't know where some of you were when you had 30 months of sobriety, but that's where I am. And, yeah, I've been lacking on taking my inventory on a daily basis. So for me, my experience is when I'm not doing that, I'm not in a place where I need to be. I'm not turning things over, and it's taken me out of that spiritual realm where I need to be. I'm slowly kind of starting to get back into that process. But yeah, it doesn't take much, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, to lose that. That contact. Anyway, so yeah, right from the beginning in recovery, I was able to start to work on step 10. It was just I'm sorry, I'm just really at a loss of words. Continue to take a personal inventory, and when we were wrong, promptly admitted it. You know, I guess I'm really having a hard time because I haven't been doing it. and that's the truth. And you know what? That's okay because that's just the way it's been. But the past, to be honest, like the past 4 or 5 nights, I have done that because as dishonest and the liar and all the things that I've done in the past to take advantage, manipulation, this is the way for me to spot check that and be in a better place. So I've done that on a daily basis, and some nights are like, well, I did cause a little bit of harm. I wasn't doing the right thing that day. My choices weren't the best. And that's just been a couple of the nights, and then the other nights I've done well, and those are better nights. I sleep better. I feel better when I get up in the morning and I pray. So wow, really. I'm embarrassed because I haven't been working my program on this part, and that's the truth. So, yeah, what better way to have to inventory is to get up here in front of all of you guys and bear witness to what doesn't work. I know it does work because I've done it, and I did it faithfully. My history is that I have to go to a bottom, and before I get willing. And at 30 months of sobriety, I reached a point. That first year, I went through a lot of stuff, and everything was new, going golfing, whatever I did. And then now here I am at 2.5 years, and I just recently went through some stuff, and it got me out of that, and that takes me away from that spirituality if I'm not doing that daily inventory at night. This is what happens. Yeah, I'm just not. I don't have anything to give. But I think that just getting up here. I mean, I wanted to say no to Bill. I did, but I can't. It's not what I've been taught. And I've been up here before, scared as hell, and I'll just do it again because what it does is it gives me growth. And I guess it maybe for you guys, you just see, you know, nobody's perfect, you know. And it's really easy to slip out of that realm, but yeah, this is a key step in a daily way of living, and you know, I'm working with alcoholics every day. I talk about it. I've been getting with my sponsor. He told me I'm in phase two, so don't sweat it. But I'm sweating it pretty good right now, you know. But, you know, I do have a sponsor that cares when I'm willing to, you know, get on the phone with him. When I'm not doing this, I've noticed what's happened in the past 3 weeks is I fly off the handle. I'm emotionally unstable. And it's not where I want to be. It's not the way I want to live. There is a solution. There's a program that works. I love being a part of this FOTS, and I'm taking some inventory right now, and I'm going to be on the phone with my sponsor after this and let him know that I didn't say no, as scared as I was, because I didn't want to sit up here and tell the, you know, before I would probably have tried to bullshit you and probably could have pulled it off, but maybe not, I don't know, but probably. I'm a pretty good liar. I'm really good at that. When I went to bed last night, I sat down and took 5 minutes and just tried to calm myself by doing some breathing and then started to do my inventory and see if I'd done any wrong, and I felt pretty good. I stayed up a little late for the meeting last night, and I was really grateful for that. It was a great meeting, and at the end of the day, it was a great day yesterday. So on a one day at a time basis, I did my inventory last night. I feel pretty good about it. I think that I'll be able to, if I were to take it right now for today, I'd feel pretty good because I'm being honest right now. As embarrassing and as much as it may hurt my ego or whatever it might be, that I'm grateful and I appreciate that Bill asked me. You guys might not have got what you wanted, but it is what it is. And this is the kind of stuff that I need. You know, when I first got sober, I'd go and I'd get up in front of, go to uni to get my 30-day chip and be in an uncomfortable situation. I knew I was going to be uncomfortable. Kristen's like, what should I read? What should I read? Well, now you know why. I was like, so anyway. I'm not going to take any more of your time. I'm really grateful to come up here and get humble. And I know this works. I've worked it. I've worked through all this stuff. But I know when I'm not doing it that it doesn't work. But I haven't drank. I haven't used. And that's a good thing. So that's all I have. Thanks.
Thanks, Eric. I think the truth is an awful lot to give, so it's good to hear that, and thanks for doing that. And just as a reminder, Bill asked, not me. So, I'm not on your resentment list. Okay, we're going to go to step 11. It says, thought through prayer and meditation. To improve our conscious contact with God as we understood him, praying only for knowledge of his will for us and the power to carry that out. And, let's see, Jerry T. is going to be taking this next one. He just asked me to read this short little part on page 88. It says, we alcoholics are undisciplined, so we let God discipline us in the simple way we have just outlined. But this is not all. There is action and more action. Faith without works is dead. The next chapter is entirely devoted to step 12. And I can't let Jerry T. get up here before I say that Jerry T. is in my home group, and we share a very special bond because we have the same sponsor, and we are both the only two people that our sponsors ever told to shut up. So if you know either one of us, you'll probably understand why. But
that's not true.
Oh! Jerry, yeah.
All right. So now we're a unique crowd of three. That's good.
The truth is that Kristen asked me to share today, not because I can share on this very well, but because she is in the same home group, and the last quarter she shared a meeting, or chaired a meeting, and I chaired a meeting, and we had this little thing going where, if you're like me, you don't like to be the first person to call the chaired meeting. And so she would call on me first, and I would call on her first. And she got the last word because we had the same sponsor, and if I told her no, I would never hear the end of it. So thus, thanks. And I will remember this, and I will pay you back someday eventually. I'm effing Jerry. I'm an alcoholic. And there's a few of you here that know what that means, and hopefully none of you else will know what that means until this is over with. I want to apologize to Rob. I missed Rob sharing, and Rob has been in my life since the day I got sober, and he's been a really big influence on me and my sobriety. And I like to have a good excuse for missing it, but I don't. The fact is that my son had a football game last night. The power went out. It was rescheduled for today, and I sat in my room and text messaged with my ex-wife so I can get the scores and the update and how the football game is going. This has regional implications. It's huge. And this morning, I didn't even want to be here. My first thought was, I'm out of here. I can make it back. It's only in Layton. That's not that far of a drive. The game went to double overtime. I'd probably be walking in the door about 10 minutes from now had that happened. So when it says, when agitated or that was me this morning. I was agitated. I did not want to be here. But luckily, God came to me and calmed me down, and I'm here to speak with you. I also was at lunch today. I met a new friend from Idaho. And I told him that I really don't know these steps. I wish I could tell you I study these steps and that I understand them completely, and I don't. And I think that's really more of a good sponsorship. I was just taken through the book and told to do things, and lo and behold, I had done the steps. And so I don't study them. I don't think about them. I just do what I've been told. However, step 11 is the only step I've ever been asked to speak on, and it's the second time that I've been asked to do this. And so I had to go back and read it and actually pay attention to it, because I read this thing a zillion times. I've read it literally thousands of times. I read it every morning, and probably 95% of the time I actually pay attention to what I'm doing. But I go through the motions. That's the same with where it talks about we reviewed our day at night. Half the times I'm going through the motions. I just do it, and I've been doing it for years now, and I think it helps. Well, let me see where else I gotta go with this. So for me, step 11 is about change. And what I was told when I came into Alcoholics Anonymous is that if I want to stay sober, the one thing I have to do is change. And I don't like change. I don't like change, just like I don't like standing here. That's probably next to standing here and speaking to you like this, change is probably the thing I hate the most. But I realized that it had to be done. And because I tried not to change. I tried to continue to do the things the same way. The problem is if I continue to act like I was when I got here, I'd probably be drinking today. And there's very little doubt in my mind about that. So luckily, I was given some things to change, and they came very slowly. There was I introduced myself as F and Jerry. You don't get that nickname without a reason. There's a reason why I was called F and Jerry, and that's because I like to swear a lot. It's really one of my favorite things to do. My goal right now is to speak another 10 minutes, and hopefully none of you will hear me swear. that's change. And that was really as simple as it started. I was told, you know what? When you get up in front of a meeting, you might offend somebody if you swear. Somebody may not be able to hear the message of Alcoholics Anonymous because you chose to have a foul mouth. Do you think you could just try not to swear when you're speaking? And I said, seems like an impossible task. However, I think I'll try. And so far, my sponsor will, if I say anything, he will remind me and he'll point his finger and say, that's one. But so far, it's gone pretty good. And so how did that come about? Well, the 11th step talks about at the end of the day, I call it the inventory. For me, there's a very fine line between the 10th and 11th step. In fact, I didn't even know there was a difference until probably 6 years of sobriety because I thought I was doing a 10th step every night when really I was doing the 11th step as it's outlined. And one of the things I had to look at every night was swearing. And it was as simple as putting yes or no. That's how I change. It talks about the, you know, we look at ourselves where we're resentful, dishonest, selfish, or afraid. For me, those are the things that really, really rule my life. Do we owe an apology? What have we done for others? I look at those every night, and like I said, 99% of the time, I go through motions. I mean, it's pretty simple. On the resentment, it's going to be my girlfriend, my mother, and my daughter, because those are the people I deal with every day. And I hate to say it, but if you're with me every day, and you're with me a lot of time, chances are if we spend more than 15 or 20 minutes together, you're going to make my resentment list, because you're going to do something that I don't like. That's just how it is. You're not going to do something my way, and they're on there 99% of the time. Selfishness, I smoke. I smoke cigars, and that is selfish. It's on there every night. But every once in a while, I get to this point where it's like I have a resentment, and it's not one of those people, because I work at those people all the time. And work seems to pop up there a lot. I have a lunatic boss, and he makes it on there. And sometimes I still think I can control this thing, and I get to the point where it's like, okay, wait a minute. Do I owe an apology? And the answer is yes. And I go and I make that apology, and it seems to help. It seems to get better. I don't think if I did this step that I really don't think I would be sober today. I do believe that this is responsible for what's changing me, because it is where I'm actually forced a small percentage of the time to realistically look at myself. Wouldn't it be greater if I had a PowerPoint right here and I could just be pointing to you? It would sure make me feel a whole lot better right now. I hate this. But it helps me change, and that's really what this has come down to for me. It talks about when we wake up in the morning, we do some meditation. Meditation is one of those really tricky things for me because I always think I got to, you know, this home, and I can't do that very often. But what I heard a speaker speak one time. He said meditation, when this book was written, has a much different meaning than what meditation has today. That the Beatles kind of got this meditation where you do that, and there's nothing wrong with that. When I can do that, I'm pretty good. But really, what meditation is just, for me, it's a morning reading. And I've been doing this morning reading for, I was doing it way before I was at step 11, probably at 90 days sober. My sponsor said, maybe you should read these things every morning. And I've been doing that religiously since that time. And for me, that's my morning meditation. It really is that simple. I read the third step prayer. I start off with, is there a God? He either is or he isn't. And I go from there, and it kind of helps me get my morning on straight. If I don't do that, which I didn't do this morning because I was really upset that I was not going to be at the football game, just so you know, my day seems to go a whole lot better. But luckily, I had a chance to go back and read it before I got here, so we're going to be a little bit better off. Probably, as I said, I do this all the time, and I only pay attention a very small fraction of the time. And the one thing that step 11 has really done for me is this one line here. We become much more efficient. We do not tire so easily for not burning energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. I like to tell you I have a strenuous job. I don't. I sit behind a desk and I play on a computer all day long. Probably spend 25% of my time surfing the internet. Yet sometimes I come home exhausted. Why would that be? It just doesn't make any sense. Maybe carpal tunnel, but not exhausted. The fact of the matter is that sometimes when I'm at work, this is the hardest place for me, is I feel like I'm in control of things. And I really feel like if people would just do what I wanted them to do, that things would go much better. Unfortunately, I don't always see that I'm doing that. It's not one of my greater skills to point out when I'm doing that. So after a while of reading this, usually a week or two after coming home exhausted, it finally dawns on me that, wait a minute, the reason I'm exhausted is because I'm trying to run the show. And that's always an eye-opening experience for me that I still do that today. And so that, then you got to go back to the stop and write the resentments, go make the amends, and the whole process starts all over again. And then you get it cleaned up and move on. So that's, that's really what it is for me. The step is the one that helps me change. I believe it's the one that helps me stay sober. As I mentioned, I was texting with my ex-wife on the game, my son's score of the game. That is a result of the 11th step. It's a result of AA, and it's a miracle. When I got divorced, we weren't texting. We were talking through attorneys. And it was not always a very pretty relationship that we had. It was through this that I was able to actually come to peace with her, and that we're allowed to actually be able to communicate today. Unfortunately, we have two children together, and that's required a lot of communications over the year. So as a result of that, I was able to text her and say, hey, how's the game going? And she gave me a play-by-play description of how the game was going. You know, I wish I could tell you it gets better than that. It really doesn't. I would, and for just so you know, for me that's a huge deal. It was really tough for me to make the decision to come up here and miss that game. He's got two more games left. This is the end of the season. There's a million reasons how I could justify in my own mind why I should not be standing here right now talking to you and should be at that game, but luckily, I'm here. There are one last thing that I'm done because I'm just rambling and I'm not really good at this. But it talks about there's a promise in step 11 that really has come true for me. And it talks about what used to be the hunch we are often surprised how the right answers come after you've tried this for a while. What used to be the hunch or the occasional inspiration gradually becomes a working part of the mind. Being still, inexperienced, and having just made conscious contact with God is not probable that we're going to be inspired at all times. We might pay for this presumption and all sorts of absurd action ideas. Nevertheless, we find that our thinking will, as time passes, be more and more in the plane of inspiration. We come to rely upon it. And that has come true. That's one of the best promises that I have. And for me, you know that promise comes true when you do something and then you stop and it's like, what just happened? Because that's not me. That's not me telling my ex-wife, sure, no problem, I can do that with the kids, instead of saying, so I was getting ready to swear. I would have blown it all right there. It's still natural for me. I have times where I say things or I do things, and I don't know where it comes from. I honestly don't know. And it seems that when those times happen, it's usually the right idea, and it's usually 100% opposite of what my natural instinct is. And they happen more and more the more I do this. That's all I really got to say. Thank you for asking me to share. Thank you for being patient with me. And that's it.
Thanks, Jerry. Truth is, the reason that I asked him is because I think he's a very good example of the action of step 11. I watch the people around me in my home group. However, as far as the game of like terrifying and making you feel uncomfortable goes, the fact that I now know I'm winning makes me feel pretty good. So, and I'm not doing a step 10 or 11 on that idea.
Okay, back.
I know. I'm good for today, though. Our next panelist is Carla, who is our Al-Anon panel speaker, and she's been willing to come up here and share her experience again, and I'm excited to hear what she has to say. Carla.
Thanks, Kristen. Hi, everybody. I'm Carla. I'm a grateful member of the Al-Anon family groups.
Hi, Carla.
And before I say anything, I just want to read this paragraph real fast. It's from page 85 and into action. It is easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. We are headed for trouble if we do, for alcohol is a subtle foe. We are not cured of alcoholism. What we really have is a daily reprieve contingent on the maintenance of our spiritual condition. Every day is a day when we must carry the vision of God's will into all of our activities. How I can best serve thee, thy will, not mine, be done. These are thoughts which must go with us constantly. We can exercise our willpower along this line all we wish. It is the proper use of the will. Again, I'm Carla, a grateful member of the Al-Anon Family Groups. Grateful today that one of the things that I learned early in the program was, it's progress, not perfection. And it's a journey, not a destination. Excuse me, I'm a little choked up. And what I've been thinking about, primarily for almost a month, is how complacent I had become in my program and how wonderful I thought I was doing and what a great job I was thinking I was doing in my program. And I thought I knew who I was and what my life was. A month ago, I found out that my son, whom I thought was clean and sober, he sat me down and explained to me that he'd never been clean and sober. And so I realized that I'd been basing a lot of my life and my recovery on a lie. I'm like, okay. So at that point, I started to have to kind of start back at the beginning. Now, I have a few 24 hours behind me. 13 to be exact. And here I am back after 13 years, starting back at step one, admitting I'm powerless over alcohol. Wow. It was shocked to find myself back there because I thought, gee, all the members of my family were clean and sober and working programs and going to AA and NA and life was wonderful and I'm going to Al-Anon and wow, was a shock. So then all of a sudden I started to have to look back and that's where I got into step 10 once again and that continued to take personal inventory. And when I was wrong, promptly admitted it. That was tough. That was tough because I wasn't who I thought I was anymore. Because I saw almost immediately the disease come back on me after 14, almost 14 years. We're riding in the car and I'm like, okay, so tell me all about it. And he's like, I've told you all I really need to tell you, Mom. I'm like, okay. And I got to thinking about it, and I'm thinking, well, now he's working his program, even though he's using, he's working a program. He's telling me mind my own business. It's what I needed to hear. It's his disease, not mine. And, wow. Progress. I did some good things that day. I got away and called my husband, and I said to my husband, I said, I'm feeling powerless over alcohol again. Totally powerless over my life, over who I thought I was, over what I thought I was doing with my life. And my husband's like, take a deep breath. Like, okay, now I'm in Indiana driving with my son, and my husband's in Utah, Price, Utah, trying to drive to work. And I'm like, he's trying to drive down the road, and I'm sobbing and crying and trying to explain what I'm feeling. And he's like, that's about him. That's not about you. Whoa. Yeah, you're right. He's on his path, and I have to stay on my path because all I could think of at the time was, I do not want to be insane again. That's all I could think about was, I don't want to be insane again. And yet, the very next day, now, keep in mind, the blessing of this trip was I got to spend a whole week with my son, whom I hadn't spent more than an hour with in probably 10 years. So we're riding in the car the next day. And I'm praying the whole time. God, help me, don't say the wrong thing. Help me remember to mind my own business. Help me remember that I love this child, 35 years old. I love this child no matter what. No matter what his choices, no matter what he's doing, no matter how he's doing it. I love him, and so I've got to let him be. I think I call my husband almost every day after that to say, okay, this is what I've done. Should I have said that? Should I have not said that? What do I say? I've never dealt with it on this level. Because when I left my qualifier, I never went back. I never looked back. I let the attorneys handle it, and I have not had anything to do with that situation. Any amends that I had to make in that situation, I made between me and God, and I make as a living amends to my current husband. That's the way I do it. So I didn't know how to deal with active anything. So I'm taking my inventory and I'm finding out that I'm still trying to fix, manage, and control. I'm still having to say to my son, I'm sorry. I won't ask that again. And I've been able to do that. You know, it's been a month. I haven't been able to ask this. I haven't. God has blessed me with not allowing me to say those same things again. You know, I don't ask. And I figured don't ask is the best way I can work my program right now. I can't deal with knowing too much. So I just, if you want it to, I leave it open. I tell him, Carl, if you want to share something with me, I'll listen. But otherwise, it's your life. And that's, you know, that's growth for me. It's taken me a long time to actually be able to let him at 35 years old live his own life. And now I understand that what I hadn't been doing, and that's how when I was said I wasn't who I thought I was, when I thought I was letting him live his own life, I really wasn't ready yet. I didn't know what that meant until I continued to take personal inventory and realized who I was and what I was doing in his life. Today I'm grateful for that. It's very difficult to take inventory of myself when I find out I'm somebody I didn't think I was. But I'm getting to a point where it's okay for him to be him and me to be me and me not to be where I thought I was, because, you know, it's a journey. And one of the things I'm learning about this journey is there's ups and there's downs. There aren't extreme highs and extreme lows anymore, because I really didn't go insane over this. And that was the shock. That was God's gift to me, was not letting me go insane again. I was able to focus on me and not turn my life around into being completely Carl's mother, which wasn't going to work in my marriage anyway, to give up my husband and spend my whole time worrying about my son. That wasn't going to work anyway. So I was kind of glad that God showed me a different way of handling that one. As far as step 11 goes, let me read this paragraph. As we go through the day, we pause. When agitated or doubtful and ask for the right thought or action, we constantly remind ourselves we are no longer running the show. Humbly saying to ourselves many times each day, Thy will be done. We are then in much less danger of excitement, fear, anger, worry, self-pity, or foolish decisions. We become more efficient. We do not tire so easily, for we are not burning up energy foolishly as we did when we were trying to arrange life to suit ourselves. I'm grateful today for so many things, and one of them is I have an extremely difficult work environment, and what I have learned, believe it or not, it's amazing, this journey thing. I have learned a lot more about me since finding out about my son about a month ago. I have had a lot of struggles at work, a lot of stressful relationships at work, and what I've learned through that, through prayer and meditation and remembering to stop through the day and Thy will be done, is that I can choose, each day what kind of day I'm going to have. And that's what looking for God's will for me does. If I start my day and I say, thy will be done, and nothing's going to happen to me today that you and I can't handle together, I know that I'm going to be okay today. And if I don't stop in the morning and turn my will and my life over to God and seek him, and that's my sought through, is I seek him. I don't just read my books and say my prayers. I actually seek to have contact with God, and I try to do that throughout the day. I'm finding that I'm still the problem. And if I step back and say, thy will, then I'm connecting with my higher power, and I can let my coworkers be who they are. I quit trying to control everything. I have no control over anything anyway, but I'm still Carla. Today I have so many blessings in my life, and as long as I can remember that, I'm going to be okay. The people around me are going to be okay. they're not going to get choked or yelled at or you know, have somebody swear at them, or you know, that they're going to be okay as long as I remember to keep me okay, you know. I'm just grateful today that I have learned to stop and say, thy will, not mine. I still have some trouble with forgetting that, and it seems like every time I stop looking for God's will, somebody will say something, and I'll look and I'll go, what a bee. And I don't usually swear. Swearing's not part of who I am. and I'll stop and I'll say, boy, she's a bee. And that's as close to swearing as I get. But when I do that, I know that I'm not working my program and I'm not seeking God's will, because I know that's not part of who I am, who I want to be. It's just not what I want for me. So I know if I'm thinking they're a bee, I'm out of whack. And I need to stop, and I need to look for God's will for me. And I'm grateful for the big book, and I'm grateful for you all. This is, my third conference speaking here, and I appreciate that they keep asking me back. I must say something that's okay anyway. Thank you.
Okay, we'll open it up for about 15 minutes for anyone who wants to share.
Hi, Chad. I'm an alcoholic.
Good job.
First, want to say this step is all about accountability, so I just want to let you know Kim made me do it. That's the only reason I'm up here sharing. You know, I'm only going to talk real briefly about the only part of step 10 or 11 I'm any good at, and that is promptly making amends. And actually, I'm an expert at promptly making amends, because I'm kind of an asshole. And it's compounded by the fact that I'm loud. I'm 6'2", I'm actually 215 pounds now, lost 45 pounds, but I'm 260 pounds, 6'2 guy with a voice that goes through concrete. It doesn't take much for me to get a little hot, a little hot under the collar, the little slightest raise in my blood pressure for what to me seems like I'm a little agitated. To be on the receiving end of that, to be a real big deal. And it sucks. I like to complain about it, but every time I get the slightest bit upset, it turns into a big deal. So I've had to survive 5 years into sobriety, I've had to learn to make prompt amends. And I think that word prompt to me cannot be overstated. You know, I'll just share with you two quick stories that involve people that work at retail people, because that seems to be a big theme of mine. A couple months ago, I was behind the eight ball on this project for my thesis, and I was stressed out real bad. And I went to Ace Hardware, and I got into a disagreement with the woman there about something that I thought they should do that was against their policy. And she was very calm and kept explaining that's our policy. And anyway, and I just said, you know, I love the F word too. And that also, by the way, if you can just keep from saying the F word, that will actually cut out like half the amends that you have to make. Because once I say the F word, that just somehow makes something worse. But so I told her off, and I went storming out to my car, and I got in my car, and I drove back up to school, and I just went, oh, God damn it. I have to go back down there today. And I had to finish something. I had to finish something first, so it was like 3 straight hours of suffering, knowing I had to go back down there. And so I get in my car, and I go back down there, and I take a deep breath, and I pray, and I go in there, and I take this woman, and I say, you know, and the worst part is, by the way, is that they see you coming, you know? So they're already like, because I'm walking up to them, and I'm just like, look, you know, I came in here earlier, and what I said wasn't appropriate, and you didn't deserve to be yelled at, and along those lines. And contrary to AA folklore, they're not that impressed with you. I mean, they're really not. And so she's like, okay, well, thank you. And I'm like, you know, have a good day. And I went out to my car, and I hated every minute of that. I hated every single minute of that. I hated the process of it. I hated going in there. I hated walking out. I just felt like shit the rest of the day. But I'll tell you another story. I hate salespeople, too, in general. Like, it's just I have a hard time with them. I hate people trying to sell me something. Let me just take that back. I hate people trying to sell me something I didn't ask them to try to sell me. So you can imagine that when door-to-door salespeople come to my house, it's a test of my spiritual serenity. And I had one of these guys, these, like, inner-city kids that they take from halfway across the country and send over here to sell magazines, which to me is not a very nice thing to do to inner-city kids, by the way. But came to my house at the wrong time. And I swear, I saw him coming, and I tell myself, I'm going to handle this right. And I think I did for like a minute, but he didn't take no the first time. And anyway, I'm not exaggerating. It ended with him crying and running away. This 18-year-old African-American kid from the other side of the state, or the other side of the country, running away from my house, crying. And then he ran around the corner, and I never saw him again. And so I didn't get to make that amends. To this day, I don't know. I couldn't tell you how I would ever even find the guy. He didn't come back later. Like, I never got to make that amends, you know? And I got to tell you, as much as I hated going back to that Ace Hardware, that one doesn't sit with me today. Like the one with that kid that is something that I don't get to clean up directly. And I've had a couple where I have been able to and a couple where I haven't been. So, you know, I only point that out because that prompt part of it is so important to me, because I got to tell you, as much as I hated that, going back in there and doing that, it's so much better now than the ones that I haven't been able to do. So, you know, that's been my experience. I mean, honestly, we don't talk about enough in AA about embarrassment, but when something is embarrassing to me, at 5 years sobriety, I want to just bury it and not talk about it, not face it, ignore it, you know. And it's the stupidest stuff that will let kind of take all that power over us, you know. And so it's important for me to get that out there, because that kind of thing happens to me a lot. And as long as I can sit here and face up and tell you guys stuff like that, and as long as I can go in there and face that woman, I'm going to be okay, you know. And that experience, not being wonderful and great, and they don't, you know, oh, I'm so amazed at you, and nobody ever does that, and all that stuff that you hear about, which is bull crap. That experience sucks so bad, and it's helpful to me, because there's been a lot of times since then where I haven't yelled at the lady behind the counter, because I remembered how much I hated making that direct amends. And if I didn't go back there and do that, I probably would have a lot more of those on my plate. So, you know, anyway, I would like to say I'm better at the rest of Step 10. But I'm not. So if I've been really restless, irritable, and discontent the last couple weeks. So if any of you think I owe you an amends, I know I owe Enzo an amends. Come let me know. Let's just get it out the way now. So anyway, thanks for letting me share.
Thanks, Chad.
My name's Aaron. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Aaron.
And this is pretty easy to talk to, because this is almost like talking to a home group. Because I guess I hang out with the winners. A lot of the people that I see in my home groups, sometimes I go visit other groups, so I know a lot of people in this room. And most of the people in this room seem to be living lives that are pretty happy and productive. And I am breaking one of our rules in that we're not supposed to volunteer, but I figure I'd just share. There's some interesting things that have happened with my home group in Alcoholics Anonymous and Step 11. One of the things I've always wanted to do is do a daily inventory, and I moved out here about 3 years ago, and the home group I joined, they really, my sponsor does daily inventory, and I've seen his stacks of daily inventory, and so I wanted to do that, and I started doing that. And Kristen behind me is part of my home group, and she always shares that her sponsor asked her about her cats and what she did for her cats. And she said, I don't know what that has to do with sobriety. So one of the things I write down on my inventory is I live with my girlfriend, and I had a dog, and I'd write those two. So I haven't done inventory too long because there's a lot of people in my home group that know that I just put my chocolate lab down on Thursday, which is about the only thing I can really could get close to. And so I haven't done inventory lately because I don't want to write, because I have to leave that part blank now because I can't take him out for a walk and I can't play ball with him or make sure that I'm doing what I need to do. But the interesting thing is prior to putting my dog down is that on a consistent basis I had problems with my girlfriend. She would, you know, upset me about wet towels and dishwashers and making decisions about where we'd go eat and things like that. But what I've realized, I don't like making those prompt amends, so I showed up. I've been showing up for this whole deal. I've showed up for her, I think. I'm pretty proud of what I've done. And in doing that inventory and through the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I don't have any regrets. I never kicked my dog. I never smacked my dog. And for what it's worth, he never went without food and water. And it's kind of weird. I really feel like I've been hit by a truck. Because I learned shortly on, like with women, if I was going to break up with one woman, I'd be kind of seeing one on the side so I wouldn't have to really grieve the loss. And so I've kind of always done that. There's a guy in here that talks about keeping his foot in the door, but I didn't realize that when he was a puppy that I wasn't going to be able to keep my foot in the door. And I guess he was kind of like a C&I dog for sobriety. I wanted my dog to be tough. I remember I shared this Monday in my home group, and we took him down to the beach in Chicago, and we were playing, and some other dogs came over and were showing dominance. I didn't know anything about dogs. I didn't even want a dog, so I was trying to fight the other dogs. I literally wanted to punch the other dogs, and I learned that that's not the way you do things. And he used to run behind me at the dog park, and he was afraid of all the other dogs, and I didn't want that kind of dog because it was kind of a wimpy thing to do. I wanted a tough dog because I was a tough guy, and I just thought about this. AA taught me really well, but he was the first guy that taught me how to greet, because we'd walk down the street in Chicago and everybody loves a puppy. They'd want to come up and shake his hand, and I'd have to talk to them and I'd have to be civil. And through doing the 11th step, and is I knew what was coming up through this, and I don't want to make amends. It can be a preventative measure, so I feel like it's helped me show up. I mean, that's why I'm here. That's why I'm wearing the baseball hat, because I really didn't feel like waking up today. I really didn't want to go do anything. But Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, you guys taught me how to show up and suit up and show up and that kind of thing. And there's tons of people who've come up to me in this room and said, I'm sorry about that, and hugged me and cried. That's the women. And the guys who say, and the guys who said, I'm sorry, and stuck their hand out at a good masculine distance and said, I'm sorry. It's a tough thing to go through. That's all I have.
My name's Kathy. I'm an alcoholic. I don't know. I felt compelled to come up because I really love step 11. I thought, oh, finally an easy step. Not going to require me to write stuff down, you know, this and that, and the next thing. I just have to seek through prayer and meditation, and then exactly what does that mean to me? And my first sponsor and my brother both were big Step 11 fans, and so they said, yeah, look in the 12 and 12, and there's a great prayer in there, and I want you to do it every day, and I want you to put it next to your mirror in your bathroom. And I thought, what? That's more work. But I did it anyway, and now I'm so grateful for it because it gets me out of me. And when I'm in me, it's a bad, scary place to be. I'm involved with this group of people at the Women's Retreat House. And if you guys are ever in Ogden, come up there and go to meetings. It's right at the base of the mountains. It's a very beautiful place. And there's place there for women to go and work the 12 steps and get sober. But they have great meetings. And one of the things that we do with a group of people who help kind of facilitate that place is at the beginning of every meeting we read the what we call the 11-step prayer. And so I just thought, you know, I would go ahead and read it just because it just reminds me of what we're all trying to do, you know. And Lord, make me a channel of thy peace, that where there is hatred, I may bring love, that where there is wrong, I may bring the spirit of forgiveness, that where there is discord, I may bring harmony, that where there is error, I may bring truth, that where there is doubt, I may bring faith, that where there is despair, I may bring hope, that where there are shadows, I may bring light, that where there is sadness, I may bring joy. Lord, grant that I may seek rather to comfort than to be comforted, to understand than to be understood, to love than to be loved. For it is by self-forgetting that one finds, it is by forgiving that one is forgiven, it is by dying that one awakens to eternal life. And a woman's retreat house, you know, we all know when we first came in here, we're just empty. And a lot of women come there and they're just empty, whether it's the alcohol or the other substances, they're empty. And so all of us who volunteer there, we try to remember that that's what we're trying to do, is reach out and be there for those people, like someone was there for me, you know. And for me, all the inventories, and if it feels like a lot of work, I'm just, you know, slothful still. But if I feel like I'm reaching out and that I'm doing something, it gets me closer to my definition, my God, you know. So I'm grateful for this. Grateful to be up here. This is my first time, and thanks.
All right. Thanks to everybody who shared. Thanks to all the panel speakers. I'm a little scared now because the witnesses are going to be gone soon, and I'm afraid of Jerry. But thank everybody for sharing. I think it's 10 and 11 steps for those maintenance steps, and so I really appreciate everybody's honesty because in the same way, sometimes up, down, it's daily thing, one day at a time. A couple announcements. There's going to be another meeting tonight at 11 p.m. in the hospitality room again. They said it was pretty good last night, so go to that. The other thing is about the Al-Anon participation. Since I've been seeing it a little bit, but the Fellowship of the Spirit Conference is what it is because it's AA and Al-Anon together, and you know, I think that's why everybody enjoys it. And this year we had a little difficulty getting some Al-Anon participation. Luckily, a lot of people came through, and we're really, really appreciative of all the Al-Anon members who helped make this a FOTS conference this year. So just as a note to say again, like I've announced before, if you're an Al-Anon member and you can help us out again next year, please sign up. You know, we don't want to have to change this conference. I mean, you know, that's what we'd have to do if there was no Al-Anon participation. It would have to be just a different kind of conference. So please help us out if you love this, you know, as much as it seems like you do and as much as we do. So that's it. We're done.
Thanks, Kristen.